And welcome to this is episode 9, right?
Yeah.
Films like the first time.
Films like the first.
It time. Still does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's films like the ninth time.
Jeez.
This is a podcast where my nose is stuffed up, so apologies for that. But also, every week we pick a movie that generally is a popular movie that is lauded, and at least one of us hasn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
Last time it was Nick's turn to choose a movie, and he chose Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Absolute classic.
Because I, Amanda, have not seen that movie, or that had not true. Until a couple days ago.
This is, like, there are some real egregious sins in all of our lists that, of not having seen it.
That's the word I was, exact right. word I was thinking.
But this was
too.
A big one.
Egregious.
And, you know, it's one that I've been getting flack for decades.
Yeah, because it's an amazing movie. Plus, it's so different than so many other films. Like, there are very few films that balance not just live action and animation, but also, like, noir and absurdism in the same movie. It's so wild in that sense.
Yeah, it's almost Python.
Right, the absurdity part of it, for sure.
This is, I talk about boy movies and girl movies. This is a boy movie.
Fair enough.
For sure.
I think it's a kid movie,
but
it's also...
it is, but it's, like, when I was watching it, because, first of all, I was kind of chatting with Nick yesterday about it, and I, going in, because I'd never watched it, I was just never interested in it, and going in... I was expecting something more like Cool World or Monkey Bone. I thought it was an adult movie.
Oh, so
movie.
You thought it was shit.
I thought it was an adult. Yeah, that's why I was never interested in it. I thought it was an adult movie that happened to have cartoons. I did not realize that it was a kid's movie that had adults participating in Looney Tune world,
not
essentially.
Just adults. It's got Bob Hoskins.
Oh, hey, this is Dave, by the way.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Dave. So, yeah, I didn't realize that this was just a full-on children's movie. And as I was watching it, I'm like, no wonder 10-year-old boys loved this movie.
Look, Bob Hoskins made two of the best children's movies of all time. This, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You're actually putting... I mean, look, I'm no fan of Hook... but
oh shit, he wasn't Hook. I forgot about that.
But I would not put Super Mario Brothers anywhere near Hook.
I would put it above Hook, just personally, just because. And I understand that it's not a good movie, but
you know,
I
it's cultural appropriation of the worst kind.
Dave is Italian.
And you've got Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo.
Yeah. I can't buy an Italian.
Oh, but they're so great in this that terrible movie.
No. I think, you know, what year was that?
Super Mario? It's got to be like 92, 93.
So I'm trying to think whether or not I saw Carlito's Way before this. Because that would have been... That would have been the first time I saw John Leguizamo in whichever movie that was. And I want to know if I forgave him.
Did
later, you know, because I don't have the animosity of John for John Leguizamo. Not, I don't even have animosity towards Bob Hoskins. It's all about the producers of that pile of crap.
Hey, we should talk about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, let's talk about a movie for kids that rules.
It does rule.
It was cute. Okay, so I made you guys watch The Last Unicorn, and Dave hated it. Nick was like, eh. Ah. And I think I had the nostalgia for that movie watching it as a little girl. Mm-hmm. Yes. This movie is that, but for you guys.
But like, with a good plot.
Like, you guys watched this as little kids, and you were like, oh my God, it's amazing. There's cartoons everywhere. And I'm like, it was fun. It was fine. I did not enjoy it. But yeah, I think that I missed out on something not watching it as a kid.
And way better and sensical musical numbers.
Okay, we're not worried about we're done trash talking The Last Unicorn, okay? We've moved on to this movie. We start out Who Framed Roger Rabbit with a scene where Roger is acting with a baby. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the most cartooniest cartoony thing ever, because they are cartoons, where the baby is like, oh, cookie! And of course, going through as many dangerous things as humanly possible to get to this cookie, while Roger fails over and over and over and over again to rescue the baby. And then at the end, Roger gets a fridge dropped on him, but it's okay, because they're toons, and toons can't die.
Yeah, but Roger keeps getting it wrong. He keeps seeing birds instead of stars.
Yeah. I think it's kind of fun that he can apparently manifest what he sees. Like, the birds aren't extras that come in on cue. He manifests them somehow. That was a little weird, but
that's the magic of cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Also, while this scene is technical, you know, maybe when I was a kid, well, no, I don't think this first scene was ever my favorite. I liked it a lot more when I was a kid, obviously, because it's what I was already watching. But even though I kind of like it more now, in that this opening scene really kind of is a metaphor for the whole character arc of Roger. Well, yeah. Or try as he might, as good intentions as he might have, he will fail.
Because he's a fuck up.
Yeah.
But also what I actually like about this scene as well is that it takes this thing that we've seen before, and it was a bigger thing back in the day, but it's something that Pixar still likes to do, which is the short, the comedic short before a film starts, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they did that. They have this cartoon that's happening before the movie, but they made it into the beginning of the movie, which is such a beautiful thing to do.
I'm gonna just go ahead and kick off the hyperbole right
you,
now.
You are just like, oh, it's just cinematic gold. And I'm like, it was a fucking Looney Tunes cartoon, whatever. It was the kind of cartoon that my mom would not let me watch as a kid because it was too violent.
It was hyper violent. And I think that's part of the
like
ratchet
my mom
that up
didn't
in this
like
movie.
Me. She didn't let me watch Bugs Bunny and Looney Tunes and stuff. My brother could, but I couldn't.
It was too violent. I would say the violence in this goes beyond the Looney Tunes and goes into full on Tex Avery level of animation violence.
I don't know what that means.
Tex Avery
basically the head bullet.
Yeah. Lots of knives, lots of things like that. Tex Avery was one that had the wolf that would like auga at women all the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's his style is the way Jessica Rabbit is drawn isn't very very much the way Tex Avery drew women.
Okay. So it's very even pre Looney Tunes, it's old school like Mighty Mouse. And Popeye and olive oil.
I think you don't realize how old Looney Tunes are.
Yeah, this is true to the time.
But Betty Boop was in black and white, so like
the first couple Looney Tunes were too.
But she never made
but
it to color.
It's
really.
Not. She didn't. It's not the Looney Tunes that I grew up with. So
yeah, no, you grew up with more of the 70s Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Whereas
I mean 80s Looney Tunes, because I wasn't alive in the 70s,
no,
thank
but
you very
you
much.
You still see the 70s ones on TV in the 80s. Like, a lot of the Looney Tunes that we grew up with were the ones that were from the 70s and 80s, and not the really old ones. Sometimes you get to see the really old ones.
Oh, yeah, you get yeah. They have that, Jesus. Who's the It's a Wonderful Life director again?
Frank Capra.
It has that sort of a quality to, or, sure. Or even like a Donna Reed sort of, where, you know, the normal, well, musical swell into the blackout commercial, like the a lot of right. fading in and out, and like just that very old style. And yeah, they did look at that's. I mean, we're not looking for it to be accurate to like what you remember. This is 1947.
Yeah, and they did play into the 1940 style for sure.
And in 1947, I gotta say, I'm stoned now. Just so you know, but that's because I was totally sober watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I switched it up this time. But man, there were some levels of this movie I did not. Remember? Or that I get, yeah.
Yeah, same.
And I didn't realize either how long it had been or how little I must have paid attention.
Well, I mean, where I was...
You guys were probably distracted by the cartoons when you watched it.
Well, no, but there were even, like, jokes that I caught when I was a kid but didn't understand fully. I mean, like, the joke that always stuck around with me is from day one was Scotch on the Rocks.
Yeah.
But yeah,
because he even screams. He's like, I mean ice. And then of course the scotch comes out on actual rocks.
Yep.
Which you know what? You can get whiskey stones. So as long as the rocks are refrigerated, who cares?
Those were just like straight up from the ground rocks.
Yeah.
One of the things I realized after the rewatch was this movie came out in 1988. Mel Blanc voiced his classic Looney Tunes characters in this. He died in 1989, so this is one of the last things he did.
Wow, real lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, and if you know the story of Mel Blanc.
I saw that too. I didn't know it was that soon.
Yeah.
But I was surprised, or I didn't know that he died so soon after that, because I would not have guessed.
Right.
Until I looked at the wiki, and I'm like, because I mean, the voices are all great, but they're all very brief.
Right.
So you don't get like a full, you know, Bugs Bunny monologue. Not that we got those anyway, but you know what I mean? Like he only had like five lines in the whole thing. So there wasn't a lot to judge.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I looked on the wiki, I'm like, I'll be damned. He did do all of them. And I realized then I would have thought he was dead before that.
Well, he was in a coma for a long time. If you know the story of his life, he got into a car accident, was in a coma for years. And then it was the voice, his son doing the voice of Bugs Bunny that woke him up from the coma. And then he lived a bunch more and then died in 1989.
Jesus.
Yeah. So it's a wild life story.
Is there a doc? I don't want to read it.
Probably.
Probably. I don't know.
I just thought if he was that interesting.
That's all, folks. The Mel Blanc story.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, that would make sense, honestly.
It'd be a great title for it.
Yeah, everybody... When found out that we were watching this movie, the people that commented, first of all, it was all men, because again, that's this, not this true. Is very much a boy movie.
There was one female.
Well, were the females like 17 or something? Where they might not, they're like, what's that?
But I was it, all men that were like, oh my god, I remember watching that movie and how great it was, and almost everybody was like, yeah. When I saw Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny, and I'm just like, why is that so exciting?
Because they're from two different companies.
It's like seeing Iron Man and Batman.
Yeah, it's like it is. It's equivalent of a DC MCU mashup,
and it's the same company.
If I had watched that as a child, I would have never thought about, oh my god, this is like the crossover event of the century. It just would have been like, oh cool, cartoons I like.
Did you like not if Rainbow really watch?
If Rainbow Bright came in riding on My Little Pony, I guess I would have thought it was cool.
But it wouldn't
have occurred to me that it was two separate properties. I just would have been like, oh, this is fun.
Okay, well, if you watch as many cartoons as maybe boys did,
yeah, boys watch.
You know
cartoons.
That, like, you imagine these things, but they don't. But they don't. That just doesn't happen.
I mean,
wouldn't it be cool if Spider-Man just caught the Joker? Yeah, that'll never happen.
As an adult watching it, I was surprised at how many different properties, I guess, they got the rights to be in this. Because I was like, oh wow, these are the actual drawings and the actual voices of these cartoons. So, it's not a parody of them.
So Touchstone was the producer.
MGM.
Was owned by Disney. Touchstone was owned by Disney at the time. And so they had to get into an agreement with Warner Brothers to get the Looney Tunes. And the agreement was that their cartoon characters had to be on camera it with for as much time or for the same amount of time as any major Disney characters. And so that was part of the reason that you had the ducks together and Mickey and Bugs together, because then they could prove that they were on for the exact same amount of time.
Same thing at the very end where you think Porky's taking it out and then
Tinkerbell. It was Bob Anderson who commented about the Mickey thing. So
he's not the only one, but
the other comment we got was from a woman.
Oh, Susan, she just said yay.
Yes, with two exclamation points. So it's not just a boy movie. It's somebody other than Amanda movie, maybe.
Everybody, you're speaking strictly to our Facebook page, but I'm talking about like actual interpersonal conversations.
I don't have those. Always been
guys that have been like, oh yeah, like I've heard other people mention the Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse thing too, that it was so exciting to see that for them. So
we've gotten really far into this movie so far, by the way.
Yeah.
We've seen one.
So we're introduced to Roger Rabbit. We're introduced to the baby character that is actually a 50-year-old man.
Baby Herman.
There you go. That's his name, Baby Herman. We realize that we are on a movie set and that live-action people are directing this movie, that the Toons are in, that Toons are part of, you know, they have their own neighborhood or whatever. They're part of the world.
They are sentient
beings,
sovereign citizens.
Yes, they are.
Of Toontown.
Of Toontown. They're, you know, sentient sovereign citizens that are segregated.
That was actually intentional.
I'm sure it was.
At times. Like the club, which we see in a little bit, where it's, Toons are there to work and perform, but they can't just come in and sit and have a drink. Which was a reflection on the 1940s, which is why they did it that way.
Because
layers.
Layers. Ooh. I don't take notes, so I don't know what happened after
Next
that.
Next is the meeting between Eddie Valiant and R.K. Maroon.
I don't know who these people are.
R.K. Maroon was the studio executive.
Okay.
And Eddie Valiant is Bob Hoskins' character.
Okay, thank you. So the detective and the studio executive.
Yes.
Detective.
Also,
executive.
Every man in this movie, except for Bob Hoskins, is like the same height, same build, dark hair. So, like, I don't know who these people
are. They're ripped out of 1947.
Yeah, they really are.
Everyone looks alike except Bob Hoskins, who's short and hairy.
Just like, hey, that's the real power of Robert Zemeckis, making people just seem like, hey, yeah, sure, I'm at a prom in 1955. Yeah, why not? I was hanging with JFK at the White House.
So yeah, he gives him the directions of, hey, Roger's wife Jessica
she might be fooling around,
doing something unsavory.
So and that's why his acting has faltered. He's distracted. So
his energy isn't the problem. That's for sure.
Why don't you go follow her and see what she's up to?
Yep.
So he does that.
See what she's doing, who she's doing it to.
But first he has to go get his camera from his girlfriend, ex-wife, wife.
Girlfriend, on again, off again girlfriend.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
These are people who are definitely not together, but are too scared to move on from each other.
That's why I wasn't sure. I was like, at first I was like, is she the ex-wife? And then they were together again. And I was like, maybe she's the girlfriend that like wants him to get his shit together.
I feel like they were never married.
I don't know.
But I think they were pretty serious. Yes. Dolores was her name, by the way. As we learn later, the backstory of that history, I mean, it's beautiful and sad. And, you know, you can understand why she's both, you know, giving him shit and very forgiving of him.
I was mostly distracted by the camera that she gave him, because as a photographer, I was like, that is a cool camera.
Right.
Forget Mickey Mouse. I want to see this camera.
I hope this isn't the last time we talk about Joanna Cassidy. Because
what else has she been in?
Blade Runner.
Oh.
Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Oh, great movie. You've seen that, right?
I have seen that, yes.
Okay. That would have been a good episode.
You can watch that just for funsies.
I learned about petty cash because of that movie.
Right?
And she's in 6 Feet Under as well.
Okay.
Because everybody that got in 6 Feet Under was great. But anybody from this movie else? I don't know.
They had to have told her, like, okay, so technically Hoskins is playing the straight in this movie, but you're pretty much the only real straight in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's... He's cartoony in the way that he's obviously not a toon, but he's cartoony in the very, like, noir trope.
He's very fits in the noir detective trope, yeah.
You could actually say that Jessica is also playing it just as straight as Dolores.
Yeah.
And that's fair. Because she is very cartoony in look.
But she's very level-headed.
I'm played by Kathleen Turner. I mean, it's just...
Right.
Like, she's got the perfect kind of voice to do this. Mm-hmm.
Well, she did at the time. Her voice now is very, very different. She's been affected a lot by years of smoking.
I don't think I've heard her voice in forever.
Oh, she's...
I'm sure it's
I'm sure she's a more believable Chandler's Chandler's mom,
dad.
Mom, dad.
Dad. She was Chandler's dad.
Fair enough. So we get the camera. We see the bar for the first time and the rogues gallery of characters that basically live at the bar. We see the red car, which he hops the red car illegally to get to the bar.
Mm.
And you know what's funny is seeing the red car made me sad because, and it's weird that I got this at the beginning of the movie, knowing it comes up in the movie later on,
pretty big plot point.
But just the idea of like, man, wouldn't LA be so much better if they still had this?
Yeah. Well, that was kind of what Zemeckis is saying, though.
That's exactly what I mean. Yeah. That's a whole layer I didn't get until watching it this time.
That's fair.
Because that was just like, oh, well, that's B plot. Because,
you know, and LA infamously has terrible traffic and absolutely no public transportation.
It actually has a lot of public transportation, but it's terrible public transportation. Yeah.
No one takes their public transportation.
Yeah. But yeah.
Chicago
has terrible traffic, but we also have great
public transportation.
Yeah. Doom in sort of the embodiment of greed.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get there.
But I like that. I think what that is one of the nice things about this movie is that there are these moments of commentary that even if you're just in for the ride and you enjoy the movie and you don't get them, they're there and they're nice if you get them, and they don't destroy the movie if you don't get them.
It made me weirdly wistful for a time I've never lived in.
I don't know. I've ridden streetcars in other cities. So.
I have too. I actually I when I'm in Florida, I do. Mm-hmm. I ride those.
I guess I didn't realize Florida had streetcars. I ride them in New Orleans and I've ridden them in San Francisco.
The cable car in San Francisco is an experience.
Yeah, because you can sit on the outside.
And you feel like you're going to die going through parked cars.
But it's just weird, like, oh man, that would be great.
So the thing that always makes me wistful, like, from this movie about that is the old movie house thing. Yeah. Like the idea of going into the movie theater, being able to watch a newsreel and a cartoon and a film and just kind of getting more than one thing, right? Instead of going and just watching what you paid for and leaving again, right? That's such an old school thing, and it just feels like that'd be like really cool. Obviously, in our society today, with, you know, instant news on our phones, we don't need the newsreel at the movie theater. But
that's where a lot of people. Well, you would,
because there's no phones allowed in my movie house.
Fair enough.
Without going down a huge rabbit hole, you just mentioned that. Have you guys ever seen the movie Matinee with John Goodman?
I have not.
Okay, just throwing that out there. That's literally what that is about. Is the old movie houses and John Goodman trying to put in an experience, like adding buzzers in the seats that go off when something happens on screen
The best, but it's creative.
I haven't watched it in probably 30 years, but it was a lot of fun. You should check it out.
I should check that out. I also just want to point out real quick before we move on with this movie, John Goodman is maybe the best actor that has never really gotten his full flowers. You know what I mean?
That's a list.
But he's way up there. And the number of movies he's been in that have won, like, Best Picture is really incredible. And his performance in everything is really great.
I can only think of one movie that he's ever ruined. And that was...
King Ralph.
No.
Go to hell.
It's terrible.
Please.
King Ralph is a classic.
Please. The person who ruined that is... what's her face?
Camilla Parker Bowles?
Sorry. What?
No, the new queen.
Yeah. Well, isn't the isn't the woman who played her the same one who was what's her face's Rose's mom in Doctor Who?
Yes.
See? So she ruins everything.
Aww.
Okay. Anyway.
John Goodman is the light in that movie. What was the one thing that he ruined?
Red State. And it's not really so much him as...
I liked Red State.
It's.
But I don't remember anything ruining that movie. I don't remember... Well, a lot of people didn't like it, and I don't know why. Well, I liked it.
Once the feds show up at the house, the whole movie just goes straight to shit. And that's it's not John Goodman's fault, but as he's the leader of the feds, that's what... Like,
so I'd say that might be Kevin Smith's fault for writing it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Roger Rabbit.
So he gets the camera. Now he goes to the club.
And we get to... Well, we get a little Betty Boop cameo, and he's like, Betty, what are you doing here working? And she's like, well, I never, works hard now that Toons have moved to color.
Well, we also get this little bit, a little touch of, he mentions Jessica before she comes up on stage, and that she's married to Roger, and Betty's like, oh, what a lucky gal.
Yeah, she's like, oh, what a lucky gal. That's after she comes up on stage, she's performing, yeah, right. And he's like, she's married to Roger right. Rabbit, but Betty's like, oh, what a lucky gal.
It's such a weird moment, because you've got this, obviously, Eddie was not expecting Jessica to be the full Tex Avery pinup.
Uh-huh.
And yet we also get this moment of Betty Boop basically saying that Roger is a catch.
She does. Yeah. And there was something that I noticed that was a little weird that nobody really commented on or whatever before Jessica comes up on stage. Like, everybody's focused on the stage because, like, they know they're ready.
He's
talking to Betty and like, oh, what are you doing here? Oh, well, you're great, whatever. And she kind of bows her head and she kind of like sticks out her leg and like...
She adjusts her garter.
Yeah, and like pulls her. And I'm like, is she waiting for a tip? And then he never tips her or anything.
I saw that too, and I was wondering what that was at first.
It feels like a dancer wanting a tip.
Yeah.
And then he never tips her. He gets distracted by Jessica. And then I felt bad for Betty.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was that or if she was just flirting literally, trying to get his attention. You just said I still got it. What the hell?
But this also establishes something that we get more of later in the film, which is Eddie, who has very clearly shown from the first few scenes, he hates cartoons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Having that familiarity with Betty, with somebody, it's somebody he knows and has a kind, warm relationship with, so it shows like this kind of that dichotomy of it. And
all right,
makes us go, what's going on? Why is Eddie hate doing so much?
Let's just go ahead and say so people don't think we're idiots.
I mean, we are.
Okay. About this, the very obvious dynamic of what they go for is that, well, I think we sort of mentioned it earlier, but. Just this, that cartoons are basically black people in that time. And
Betty Boop, I believe, was originally modeled after a black woman.
I think so. That sounds right.
Well, that's an even heavier level then. But they start, like, his hatred towards this essentially race now because of what happened to his brother. And I took Betty as seeing her approval or at sort of needing his approval is like they must have been involved at some point.
Sure.
And just sort of wants to,
at the very least they were friends at some point.
Yeah. And the fact that he does have that fondness for her shows that it wasn't always this way. Like and we find out more and more how many relationships he actually did have with cartoons. And it just...
Damn it, he saved Yosemite Sam from going to prison. Kept him out of the hoosegow.
So I texted you guys.
I never... Did you pause it and get all it so you could read that whole box?
No.
Because that was one. Because all I saw was "hoosegow" written on the inside of that box.
Hoosegow.
The hoosegow.
I never noticed that.
I was
either.
Able to read the whole thing, but I didn't pause it. But you were saying something.
Oh, I texted you guys when Jessica Rabbit's doing her routine and whatever, and just the way she's drawn. I'm like, having never seen this movie, obviously I know who she is. But I've seen so many actual real-life women cosplaying her for the last 30 years that I didn't realize how ridiculous ridiculous she looks.
And intentionally
the way
so.
Her feet are drawn and the way she moves, and I'm like, yeah, this is some old school.
Like the full-on scoliosis.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm like, this is hard to watch. Like, so it was making me dizzy.
It is, and it was definitely intentional. We also had something very plot important before Jessica comes out to sing, and that's the introduction of Marvin Acme.
Oh, yes, Marvin, who's very excited. He's sitting there clapping like a little kid.
He squirts ink all over Eddie.
Ah, yes. I forgot about that. That is a huge plot point.
Yep, and gives him the Joey Buzzer handshake. And you're like, who the fuck is this idiot?
Acme makes all. Yeah. As soon as I heard Acme, I'm like, oh, okay.
It's just pretty brilliant. But yeah, and then he was wearing that checkered ass suit and looking like a doofus, and then
looking like Don Knotts.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, a little bit of a thicker Don Knotts, but yeah. And then Jessica comes out in the whole bit, and they go off. Together.
Oh, by the way, not sung by.
Right, not sung by. Kathleen
sung
Turner.
By Amy Irving. She was an alias. What's this? Sloane's wife. And I can't. She's married to Clint Eastwood or something.
I don't know. I don't know anything about her, honestly.
Oh, but I didn't know she could sing, and she did a nice job.
Yeah. So yeah, they. Acme and Jessica go and take off together into the into Jessica's dressing room. And first thing, I'm just like, even as a kid, I was like, this is weird.
Well, see, and again, this everything that's happened up to this point had still kind of fallen into my perception of this is an adult movie with cartoons until he's taking the pictures and you can hear, ooh, oh, ha, ha, ooh, ha, ha, ha. And he's going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my gosh. Actually, I don't think he says, oh, my God. I think he says, oh, my gosh, because there's no swearing in this movie at all. And
I never really noticed that.
There is no swearing
like there
in this movie
be
at all.
Somehow.
It's like, oh, poo, like, oh, my gosh, oh, my God. Like, there's no swearing in this movie at all.
And they don't even say balls.
Nope.
Later on. He just kicks him.
Right. Yeah, but that was funny because
what rhymes with here, this? Yeah.
But see, that's clever. I liked that. I remember that from as a kid.
I do too, but now thinking about that is like emblematic of.
Again, going in with the notions that I had, it's something that I definitely started to notice. I'm like, oh no, this is very clean. There is no swearing. We find out, of course, when he's. Showing the pictures that he has taken to Roger and the executive.
R.K. Maroon.
That,
what a maroon.
That can't believe that his wife would be playing patty cake.
Playing the patty cake.
With another man. And that wasn't a euphemism. No. She was playing patty cake.
To be fair, when you're hearing them in the throes of passion, you can hear her say patty cake a couple times.
Yeah.
She's like, patty cake. Patty cake.
Well, I think they're both saying.
Yeah, they both are, but like,
and you take all the dialogue out and just leave the slapping. It can be kind of incriminating.
But what's great about the fact that they're playing Patty?
I didn't realize what the guy's first name was, and I thought his name was just Patty. He was like Patty Acme, so she's Patty Cake me, Patty Cake me,
it's Marvin, because Robert Zemeckis loves the name Marvin. Marvin Barry, Marvin Acme. But what I love about
Patty Acme. I can't take that seriously.
But what I love about Patty Cake, though, is if this were a movie that wasn't about cartoons and it was just a straight up noir from the 40s, and somebody was like, "Oh yeah, they were playing the Patty Cake together," we would all be having sex.
Yes,
right. Yeah, and that's what's beautiful about that is they took that and turned it into an actual joke of them playing Patty Cake.
Well, and then as we're flipping through the photos, we get flipped through faster, faster, faster until it becomes a flip book of them actually playing patty cake. So there's no question as to whether or not it's a euphemism. In fact, straight up playing patty cake.
It's a joke and yet totally believable because they're cartoon.
She's a cartoon. He's a grown-ass man playing patty cake.
Look, a real-life woman who looks like that and asks you to play patty cake, you play fucking patty cake.
Yeah, I would play patty cake.
Look, I'm sure there is a large contingent of sex workers out there that would be like, yeah, I had a guy one time who just wanted to play patty cake.
I wonder if there's a generation of guys
who
have actually paid prostitutes to play patty cake with them just because of their love of this movie.
Guaranteed. It's possible.
Oh, no.
She probably had to wear a red wig.
Yeah. Or she was a redhead.
Or that.
Or Ronald McDonald.
Those are much more rare. So Roger is distraught because how could his wife cheat on him like this?
Right. And so they give him a drink.
Ah, yes. So we had this conversation not too long ago about Wild Turkey.
Oh, yeah. Eddie's alcoholism in this is just rampant.
But so bourbon now is very ubiquitous. Like, it's a popular thing. But Nick and I were in bourbon country recently. And, you know, the Wild Turkey distillery is down there. And we didn't stop, but we drove past it. And I'm like, do you remember, am I the only one that remembers when somebody talked about Wild Turkey? Like, man, you were having a day.
It's the
like,
hooch.
If you were having some Wild Turkey, like, something was going on in your life. And he's drinking Wild Turkey, like, through this whole thing. At least a generic version.
No, it's Wild Turkey.
Okay, yeah. I was like, there's a turkey
branded,
on the
label. There are branded bottles, yeah. But, yeah, he gives Roger a drink, and Roger basically explodes.
Has the reaction that you would have to drinking whiskey for the first time, generally.
As a cartoon character.
Yeah, pretty sure I didn't turn into a steam whistle.
And you didn't, like, leave a silhouette of yourself in the glass window and
I mean,
the blinds?
I feel like, yeah, maybe like the first time I had Everclear or something that actually happened. Oof. Yeah, I don't know how he survived.
But that, yeah, that was a beautiful little moment there. And yeah, the silhouette, the classic cartoon silhouette through the window was nice.
Malort. I think that.
I think that's
what happened to me during, yeah, for trying Yeesh. That.
Let's not go there. I don't want to talk about Malort. Yeah.
So what comes next? Because, again, I didn't take notes.
Eddie goes home.
Okay.
And then he wakes up the next morning to find out that Roger Acme is dead.
Oh, yes.
Not Patty Acme, not nope. Roger Acme.
Marvin Acme.
Marvin.
Fuck, did I say Roger?
You said Roger.
Well, they thought Roger did it. So he gets dragged out to the crime scene where he gets treated like shit by a bunch of people.
Yeah, because I, you know, and he obviously was a cop.
Yeah,
this is maybe a little plot inaccuracy I'm finding. So they were cops together.
Him and his brother.
Right. When did they ever actually become like private detectives together?
I feel like
he died on the job.
No, I think...
Because they were talking about, like, we were chasing this suspect.
Well, they could be doing that as private detectives.
You don't have suspects when you're a private detective. You're not
a
law enforcement.
You could say that if you're former law enforcement, you might think that way.
Just saying.
But I feel like it was when they started working Toontown. I think they decided that they felt better off. And this is all subtext, right? There's no full story about it in the movie, but like they probably just figured that they were better off working as private detectives once they started working Toontown. Which is possible. I don't know if it was before this or after this. When he was looking at the photos that had been developed, he was looking through the photos and saw the photos of his brother and Dolores at the beach and how happy they were and all that stuff. And then we find out... Oh, we also forgot earlier when he was first at the bar, the one guy's like, what's up with him? And she tells him that, you know, a tune dropped a piano on his brother and that's how he died. And so then we get to the scene.
And we need to remember Angelo.
Angelo.
I think they just hammer you over the head with, like, just so you all remember, the asshole at this bar is named Angelo.
I will tell you right now, as a kid, Angelo grossed me out so much.
Angelo looks like he just crawled out of a sewer.
Yeah. He was definitely less gross feeling
and had
as an
cold
adult.
Cuts hanging out of his mouth or something.
Yeah. But yeah, he just felt not clean. Mm. So then when we get to the crime scene and we see that a cartoon dropped a crate onto Marvin Acme, it brings back memories.
Yeah.
And even his detective buddy's like, oh, yeah, sorry about that. I'm like, you dumbass, you could put that together before.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think about that kind of stuff.
It's also kind of odd to just go grab a private detective and bring him to an active crime scene.
Well, he knows him. He's a former cop, a former colleague.
And he overstepped his bounds here.
And he's the one that showed Roger the photos that they think set Roger off to commit this murder.
And I suppose if he doesn't bring him to the crime scene, he doesn't run into Doom and the Weasels.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
Doom
the shoe.
And the Weasels. Christopher Lloyd.
Holy shit.
As a creepy motherfucker.
Judge fucking Doom.
Yeah, it's weird. I appreciate his creepiness even more, or probably as much as I did, or was actually, a, you know, sort of freaked out by him as a kid.
Judge Doom terrified me as a kid.
Yeah.
I could see why.
Yeah. And it wasn't just Doom, like the dip itself, and then we see what happens with the dip. That scared the shit out of me.
Look, maybe I'm just being a social justice warrior here, but that shoe didn't do anything.
No.
I literally messaged you guys, oh, poor squeaky shoe.
Oh, that's what that was?
But yeah. What?
I didn't I tried to...
Because, yeah, the shoe didn't do anything.
Can we talk about the weasels for a second?
Sure, let's talk about the weasels.
Because the weasels are great. But, like, as a kid, and I think it's because I never caught the line as a kid, I was just like, why aren't they hyenas? Because they're laughing the whole time. But he says at one point when they're laughing, he goes, you're going to end up just like your cousins, the hyenas.
Ah.
And I never caught that line as a kid. Well, and it's just a little thing.
They're the screeching weasels.
The screeching weasels. Fuck off. Oh, I love the weasels.
You think that's not where they got their name?
Maybe.
You're going to end up just like your cousins, the hyenas, but what is that from? Because Lion King came out way after this.
The joke of a laughing hyena.
Oh, okay. Just,
and so, like, a thing. Right.
Oh.
Been a thing.
Yeah, for a long time. And so,
I don't know that joke.
Like, why?
It's not really much of a joke.
Well, it's just that it was a thing, like, because the way hyenas, cackle, people called it laughing.
Yeah. Yes.
And so that was a thing. And so instead of having hyenas as minions, he has weasels that are laughing. And the reason that he has weasels is because the hyenas have already died of laughter.
Or so just, something.
So it well, just that's, goes to what's, show the, that, that's what he alludes to.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's weird that we find out one thing about, one fact, and then right after, a second fact that disproves the first fact.
Which is?
Which is, you know how they say there's no way to kill a toon?
There is a way to kill a toon.
Yeah. Okay, so then they use the dip. And then we find out right after that, that they can die by laughing.
Maybe they're not dead. Maybe they're just
they
stuck
die.
Somewhere.
They die, but you're not killing them. They're killing themselves.
I'm just saying, obviously, Eddie figures out a way to kill them with it. Roger even says, you're killing them. You're slaying them. You're knocking them dead.
Wow. So, and I'm sure that the chemical compound that kills toons is what they use to clean the
ink off the cells.
Yeah, it is. I'm sure
it
is.
Yeah, that was...
Without Googling it, I was just like, oh, that's probably exactly how they wipe off the drawing cells.
Never thought of that.
Yep.
See, I'm getting all this human shit, and you're giving me science.
But we also get this established because we're in the Acme warehouse for the first time, and the only time... until the finale of the movie, right? To the end of the movie. And we get a little couple of established things. The hammer with the glove, the boxing glove in it. The portable holes. Which, fuck, I loved portable holes as a kid. I was like, I want one of those.
Portable holes and the bullets with personalities.
Was that in?
I don't think that was in there. Just talking about fun little things.
Yeah. What else was... There's later on, there's the giant magnet and the singing sword, but we don't see those ahead of time.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's kind of fun. And the fact that, imagine being in the Acme warehouse and like just all of the random shit. Because you work at mini storage?
No, because I went because I was.
Probably he was out there when he was in LA or something.
I was at MGM
Studios.
The year they opened the Roger Rabbit exhibit there.
Oh, really?
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so I saw the whole warehouse. They had the chalk outlines.
That's awesome.
Yeah, dude.
That is so cool.
So you didn't even realize what a fan of this I am already.
Fair enough. I mean, that's really cool. So yeah.
So take that.
So Marvin Acme's dead. And he's like, I don't know what you want from me. We see the dipping of a shoe.
It just completely dissolves toons.
Most horrifying and agonizing way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's... like Zemeckis it's acid. Really makes us suffer through the shoe getting melted.
And
The little squeaky shoe, I don't even know where he came from.
One of the boxes. When they knocked open the box.
Yeah. He was just existing. And
like they gathered all the other ones up, and that was a loose one.
Gotcha. Yeah,
loose shoe.
So I don't know if that's... Oh, is that it? Is it because it's a shoe with no pair, and that violates the
order of things?
Yes.
Well, as we find out later, Doom doesn't care.
Yeah, he's just a jerk.
Wants to kill all the... Well, eventually he wants to kill all the Toons, but also he's a fucking psychopath.
Clearly. Because it's Christopher Lloyd, and he's looking...
Remember me, Eddie!
And he's looking like skinny Uncle Fester.
Oh my God.
He really did. It was very strange. I was watching him and I'm like, do they have prosthetics on him, or is this just what he looked like as a young man without hair?
Well, you say young man, but yeah, even then.
He was never a young man.
Well, but 40 years younger than he is now.
Well, his teeth were prosthetics for sure.
In the same way that Abe Vigoda was once a young man.
Yes, exactly.
Oh man, his outfit is like the dark cloak and hat and everything.
Yeah, he's literally death.
Death, yeah.
Death and greed.
He is once again
deadly
one of the quote unquote humans in this, but that is also very cartoony.
Well, as we learn why later.
Well, but Bob Hoskins' character is cartoony. Like a lot of the adults are still caricatures in a way. They're still cartoony, even though they're not toons.
It is weird, though, but even when trying to strike the noir tone, Doom does not fit the tone.
Right.
He's very Looney Tunes. Like,
it's just very arch.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he's actually, spoilers,
he's a toon. He's a toon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Toon playing human.
Yep.
But it is sort of weird where, you know, the other people are sort of underselling it and he comes in like a hammer.
Yeah. But also you can understand why everybody's terrified of that guy.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Human and cartoon alike. They're all like, fuck, that guy's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even that detective is like, don't see me.
Right.
Come over here. I'll tell you.
So then Eddie goes back to the office and there's baby Herman.
Oh, baby Herman.
With he's in a pram. And so Eddie comes up and just sees a woman lighting a cigar and putting it into the stroller. And he's like, don't do that.
That's sort of probably the most adult moment in the whole movie is he sees this woman who's wearing little booty shorts and she bends over and puts the cigar in, and then you realize that it's baby Herman and he's just like, I'm a 50-year-old man with the 3-year-old's dick. He doesn't say dick, but like...
Yeah, what does he say?
Dingle?
Dingle or dongle or something.
It might have been dangle.
Because, again, there's no swearing in here. But you know
three-year-olds.
Yeah, you know what he's talking about.
And then Hoskins is like, I don't have time for your shit, and pushes him, and he loses the cigar. He's like, my stogie!
Which, as a kid, I didn't know what stogie meant.
That's how I learned what stogie meant.
Well, there you go. Cigar.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
But he literally starts crying.
It's only been 35
beautiful.
Years.
Crying like a baby.
Like
not
a baby.
Not like a 50-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
About his stogie. Poor baby.
Yeah, that woman who was his like caretaker or whatever, she's literally just like one of those cigarette
girls.
Cigarette
girls.
Like Betty Boop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. And he gets in the office and Roger's there.
Yep.
In his bed.
I was like, who is in the bed? Because he pulls down the Murphy bed and you can see there's somebody there. And then you just sort of see hands. And it's like really creepy because he lays down. He doesn't notice for the longest time. I'm like, what kind of detective is so unobservant? He doesn't notice someone in his bed.
A drunk one?
Yeah.
And then, it's Roger, of course. And he's like, I thought I'd hide out here. Does anybody know you're here? I didn't tell anybody, except I didn't know where the office was. So I asked this person, and this person, and this person, and this person.
Oh, man.
The liquor store guy, he knew.
And Roger handcuffs himself to Eddie like an idiot. And Eddie's like, I don't have the keys to these cuffs. Because, of course, you don't.
Why would you?
Well, I mean, it was with his brother's kit. So, and then, of course... After that happens, the weasels show up.
Led by Squiggy.
Squiggy the weasel. Not Knifey or Straitjacket.
No, I'm just saying David Landers' voice.
Oh, is it? I didn't even realize that. That's funny.
Wait, was he Squiggy or was he Lenny?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Wouldn't you assume the little guy with the slick back hair is Squiggy?
Yeah.
That just seems like... And Michael McKean looks more like a Lenny.
Yeah.
So I'm just...
Yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, they show up.
I didn't even
know
the Weasels had names, so...
They don't. I'm just saying that...
Well, they probably do.
Lenny or Squiggy was the voice of the lead...
Gotcha.
The lead Weasel.
Yeah.
Stop that laughing! One of these days, you're gonna die of laughing!
Okay.
But, yeah, they show up and they... And Eddie hides Roger in the dishwater. Roger is so dumb.
Yes.
Like, this is the first moment where we see how dumb Roger, like, really how dumb Roger is.
That's saying something.
Well, yes, even but it's, to this point. Like, the dumbness of not being able to have self-preservation.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps popping up out of the water, and he's a cartoon. He doesn't need to breathe.
I was going
to
say, yeah. He can't drown because he's not in the dip, and he ain't laughing.
And he hasn't done the three fingers, so he's definitely not drowning. If you know the three fingers, great.
Cool.
Well, you know, when the cartoons are drowning in cartoons and they put the one and then the two up and then the three as they sink into the water. You don't remember that?
Nope.
I thought you were saying something dirty.
No, I was talking about cartoon lore.
Nope. Not a thing I'm aware of.
But yeah,
anyway.
Also, he's dumb, but also the...
Luckily, the Weasels are dumb.
They're so dumb. How did they not notice Roger?
Yeah, especially, yeah, the main one. He's literally just standing right behind and looking at Bob Hoskins. Wait, are Weasels, do they have notoriously bad eyesight? Is that why they can't drive so well, maybe?
I don't know.
Weasels,
know
I think, are really actually good little predators, so I don't know.
Maybe they're more scent or they did find by scent.
Maybe.
Mm. Look this up.
You look that up.
Okay.
Also,
I feel like I made an important point, and I just want to make
confirm
sure that
it.
I want to ruin it or improve it.
They do a pretty good job of intimidating Eddie in this scene, which is interesting because they're cartoon weasels.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They creep me out. Got all those teeth.
I always just found them to be stupid and funny. I guess I never got creeped out by the weasels.
Well,
like
I just think it's not necessarily them. It's more that they know what's happening. They'll tell Doom, and then Doom will kick his ass.
Fair enough.
Or throw him in a vat.
So they eventually leave. They eventually go, okay, Roger's not here, even though Roger's there. And Eddie takes Roger across the street to the bar, to Dolores, who hides him in an old speakeasy.
What?
Yeah. And then they decide to saw off the handcuffs. But it also turns out that Roger could have just taken the handcuff off of his hand the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
When Eddie finds that out, he could just tell he wants to murder him so bad.
So this whole Roger being the main character, we've had many conversations about me not
I wouldn't say Roger's the main character.
Not suffering an idiot. Like, when a character is just so helpless and dumb, like, I just have a really hard time rooting for them, regardless of...
Fair enough.
If it's a man or a woman or they're the main character, whatever, I'm just like, why?
Well, I don't think Roger's the main character. Eddie is the main character, even though Roger is the title character.
Mm-hmm.
B, I think Eddie feels the same way as you do.
As he should.
Yeah, I normally feel the same way, but in the fact that he's a cartoon and I'm not expecting rational...
That's fair.
No, I still want rational. That's why maybe I didn't like the cartoons that you guys did the same way, because I was just like,
well, that I understand.
Illogical and dumb.
Weasels are known for being amazing hunters. Their small, slender bodies are perfect for slipping down mouse holes, and their small, cupped ears help them to capture and hear sounds very well. Weasels also have a good sense of smell and great eyesight.
So they're just stupid.
So shit, they have no weaknesses.
They're just stupid.
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew weasels were really good little hunters. As small and cute as they are, they're vicious.
It's like a ferret.
Oh, yeah.
But smaller.
Yeah, that's true.
Or an ermine.
These weasels do not look like the ones in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
fair. They're real cute.
Well, the weasels were also drawn in a very Tex Avery kind of style. Like, they definitely played... two different tropes with different cartoons and how they look.
Yeah, because Jessica definitely... Well, it's weird you say Tex Avery, but like, it seemed like the quality of the drawing was more of a Disney.
Oh, well, that's probably because it was Disney animators drawing it.
Yeah.
Right? But like their stylistic look was like that wolfy.
And I wonder if it's because she's also a toon and a reasonable person, seemingly.
Maybe.
She's like that blend. Like they want her.
Well, I think there's also the like, if you look at classic cartoons and where they came from, the Avery cartoons were definitely the least innocent as well. And so they're the closest to noir in that sense. And
they were all real dark. Like, my mom didn't like me watching Looney Tunes, but like she really didn't like Mighty Mouse or some of those older ones that were just too adult.
Yeah.
Like too adult all around, not even just like, oh, there's too much violence, but.
Dave, you've got a look on your face.
No, I'm just, I was wondering how adult Mighty Mouse was.
I'm a little unsure about that, too. I don't remember watching a lot of Mighty Mouse.
Okay, that's my look. Because I'm like, what does she mean? What do you mean? No, what, like, Mighty Mouse,
Little B&E? Barely remember it as a kid, just because I just remember sort of watching it one day. My mom be like, no, we don't need to watch this, but... I think it was violence, and there were just more adult themes. Like, you know how they didn't shy away from things in the 80s the way they do now? Like, Nick mentioned all the smoking and drinking made this more of an adult thing, except it wasn't, because everybody smoked and drank in the 80s. Hector and I just had a conversation yesterday about the yes, they had smoking in the McDonald's Playland, because we remember all the little floppy metal ashtrays. Like, that was not outside of kids' reality, so, like, those cartoons from like the 40s and 50s were even more.
Maybe
like,
your mom didn't want you watching
Mighty Mouse. I think there was like spousal abuse and stuff in some of them.
Because
like,
Mighty Mouse was allergic to Limburger cheese and it always looked really gross in the cartoon.
It is really gross, and I concur.
I've had Limburger. That's fair.
So I can't think of anything specific, but I do remember just some of the animations and stuff, me being like, what is happening?
Well, and I don't know if
I can understand Popeye having some adult things.
I think Popeye did too. Yeah, like I said, like I think there was literally like spousal abuse and some other things in some of those old cartoons.
So Tex Avery, though, like, and I don't know how well you know Tex Avery's work, but I think Droopy was actually Tex Avery's work too.
Droopy was the elevator operator.
Right, in the movie, yes. Yeah. But and his
I
line
seen Droopy since the last time I watched.
His classic movie. Cartoon line was, "I'm so happy." But Tex Avery was very much like jazzy feeling and very like sleek and sensual. But then there was like the auga horn. Anytime there was a sexy woman, like there'd be auga horns and eyes popping out, and like it was very much an adult making animation that barely was for kids. And so I think the reason that the weasels and Jessica and specific characters like that are drawn in that style more is because it leans closer toward that adult element, that darker element, that seedier element, versus characters like Roger, who are more innocent. And so they're going to be closer to a Looney Tune or a Disney character.
Yeah, I mean, hell, Bugs Bunny's pretty much a... sociopath.
Oh, Bugs Bunny is totally a sociopath.
Well, actually, I guess we've always known that.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any doubt in that.
I think about it, yeah.
But he's
poor Elmer Fudd.
Honest to God.
I think he might have been one of the, when the wall opens up, there might have, have seen.
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's the only Fudd sighting.
Yeah. But, he leaves Roger at the bar, and then where does he go from the bar?
He takes him with for Maroon.
That was earlier, yeah. I can't remember where
They don't get out.
No, because he and Dolores leave to go somewhere, because they come back and Roger's doing a dance outside in the bar instead of in the speakeasy.
He went with Dolores? No, he left Roger with Dolores.
But he went somewhere and they both came back and Roger was on the bar dancing when they came back.
Yes.
I don't remember at all. This is probably the point when I got up to like serve myself a second helping of barbacoa tacos or something. I don't know.
But yeah, so they had to go for somewhere. I can't remember where. But they,
because that's where he finds out that Cloverleaf's buying the red car.
Well, yes,
because she tells him right out in.
Yes, and then they go in. But yeah, they go into the bar, and she, before they go in, she's like, "Roger's fine, I'm sure." And he's like, "You don't know Roger." And they walk in, and instead of being in the speakeasy hiding like he's supposed to be, he's on the bar singing to "Merry Go Round," broken down. And then the guys in the bar are all dancing and laughing, and then the record starts to skip, and he keeps smashing a plate over his head like a dumbass because the record's skipping, so he keeps doing it.
Yeah, it's funny how there's sometimes these long setups for things, and then there's like insta setup. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, see, he's just gonna go by the music. He has no control over this, and now we're gonna show you the consequences.
You know what this is? It's Ron Burgundy in the teleprompter. You know where he has to say exactly what's on the teleprompter?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same idea.
That they stole from...
From Roger Rabbit. Yeah. I never put those two together until this moment, though.
Because you don't want to mention the greatness of Roger Rabbit and anything Will Ferrell has ever had anything to do with.
I don't...
Look, I actually think the Anchorman's kind of funny. Mostly because he eats the shit. But that's neither here nor there.
I think Will Ferrell...
We don't need to talk about that.
Well, I just want to say he either gets too much praise or not enough praise, depending on who you talk to. He's what?
He's a quarterback.
He's a quarterback?
He gets more blame than he should, but also gets too much praise.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. And so, of course, the Weasels show up again, and Judge Doom shows up, and they hide Roger back in the speakeasy, and Doom's like, this is some interesting musical choices for a bunch of...
Ne'er-do-wells?
Gross individuals in this room. Yeah.
He calls them reprobates, I think.
Yes, he calls
them like, reprobates. That's a good,
is a great word.
Yeah. Great and it word. Sounds good coming from him, too. Like,
yeah.
Reprobates.
His cadence is so deliberate in this movie. Yeah. It's wild. And he's, you know, they're all like, oh, Roger's not here. And Eddie's talking to Roger in the speakeasy. He's like, any of those guys would sell you out. Angelo? He'd sell you out for anything.
That guy's a piece of shit.
Oh, Angelo.
And here's a joke I didn't get as a kid. When Angelo's like, yeah, I saw a rabbit. And the judge's like, oh, yeah? And he's like, yeah, he's right here. Say hello, Harvey. Harvey the rabbit from Harvey?
You've never seen Harvey?
No.
So Harvey...
Jimmy Stewart movie.
Pardon me, is an old Jimmy Stewart movie. And the whole plot of the movie is that Jimmy Stewart starts seeing a giant 6-foot... imaginary rabbit. And is Harvey real or is Harvey not real?
Right.
You put Tim Curry in there instead of Jimmy Stewart, and I'm watching it.
I mean, you eventually watched it with Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, Donnie
Darko.
It's not the same.
I mean, it's a giant imaginary rabbit.
Except yeah. It's not an imaginary rabbit. It's a real rabbit that he's remembering.
Fair enough.
Can you even definitively say, I don't think there is a right answer. Except don't bother.
But my point is I didn't get that joke as a kid because I didn't even know what Harvey was.
Yeah, and I still didn't until just now. Right. So.
Clearly.
But it made me laugh this time watching it.
And now that you spelled it out for me, not funny.
It was pretty funny. Say hello, Harvey.
Well, obviously to me it's not funny. Right. Though.
But Judge is like, that's fine. I have ways of making cartoons show up. And gives him the old shaven haircut.
Oh, Roger, you ham.
Oh, yes, the shaven. This is when I tuned back in, I think, from whatever I was doing.
Right, but it's so, like, I remember
no tune can resist shaving a haircut.
As a kid, I like the intensity of him just walking around, shaving a haircut, just tapping it on the wall, walking around, and it was like, oh my God, they're going to catch
that him. Cane is another piece of...
That cane is great.
Well, also another plot hole.
Plot hole? Why is that?
The magnet. Should have grabbed the cane.
We don't know if the cane is... Like, some metal does not stick to magnets.
Maybe it's gold.
Yeah.
Maybe it's... did sort of... Yeah, now I think about it. Never mind.
Yeah.
I think it might have been, though, I think.
Yeah. So
because why wouldn't he's got all this fucking money?
Yeah, he's loaded. Well, he's got all the simoleons from the job he pulled years ago.
A million simoleons.
Simoleons.
Oh, simoleons. As an actual currency.
Well, yeah, in Toontown.
Mm-hmm.
Is it actually? Is that what? Is that? Well, I guess that is implied. I didn't.
Really, yeah.
I just took it as the
the usual slang of simoleons. Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure it's the actual currency. Pretty sure it's the actual.
That makes sense.
And you know, it's something I didn't really notice before. The weasels mispronounce or say the wrong words.
All of them do. It's pretty. Roger does too. What did he say? Oh, they said something about probate. And Roger's like, my uncle had a probate.
No, but that's not the same thing. That's just literally confusing what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But this was like Damon Wayans, the guy, the prisoner character he did on In Living Color, where he would purpose, or it was like a pseudo intellectual thing.
Right.
Like they'd say, what was the, they were talking about what, he wanted he asked Doom what he wanted him to do to the apartment or something. Like, you want me to, it wasn't dissect.
I have no idea. Sorry. Can't help.
But he says it the wrong, he says the wrong word and Doom says the right word.
It's a little bit like at the beginning of the Goonies when the mom says Hare Krishna instead of Hare Krishna.
That's more Roger.
That's fair.
This is more like, allow me to regurgitate my...
Right. No, I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the weasels are great in this movie.
But it's weird that I'd never really caught the...
I had no feelings about the weasels in this movie. I was just like, oh, they're there again? Okay.
Well, you said they were creepy. That's
a
feeling.
I mean, they are, I guess, but I wasn't...
They're also just fun. Like, especially, like, the one in the straitjacket and the one with the spiky club. Or is that the same one?
The one in the straitjacket is the same one with the googly eyes. Himself with the club. Yes.
Yes.
And that's why he's in the straitjacket, because he can't be trusted not to beat himself about the head.
Oh, man. He's my favorite weasel, I think.
Mine's Bobby Heenan.
So Roger bursts through to yell two bits. He bursts through the wall yelling two bits. And Judge grabs him and he's like, get the dip. And they bring the dip in.
Dip. He says it like you're bringing French onion over. Get that dip.
And so they bring in a 55-gallon drum of dip into the bar.
As you would.
It wasn't that.
Yeah, it's a 55-gallon drum.
Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah. And they crack it open, and Roger's like, rah! And,
How was Roger like? Yeah, no, it was better the first time.
Sorry. And then the judge
No, he was trying to take a shit, trust me.
Yeah, well, I would too if I was about to get dipped.
What?
You don't want to go dipping full bowel.
In a matter of seconds, it would not matter.
Yeah.
I feel like it matters. Because then never mind.
Nope.
Anyway, so he's about to dip him, and he's like, any last words? And Roger's like, yeah, and he just ignores him. And then Eddie's like, hey, what about a drink to, you know, last drink? And Judge's like, oh, yeah, of course, sure, no problem. Like, all of a sudden, it's sensible.
Yeah, he's very amenable of a sudden. Oh, you say you've never tried fine chocolate before? Well, gosh, let me find some.
So Eddie tries to give a glass of bourbon to Roger, and Roger's like, I'm trying to cut back. Fucking idiot. Once again, no sense of self-preservation for Roger. And
he is just dumb, too.
But I love that they recreated the rabbit season, duck season moment with the drink. You know, you want the drink. I don't want the drink. You want the drink. I don't want the drink. You don't want the drink. I want the drink. And Roger drinks the drink and explodes again, because it's what Roger does when he drinks.
Yeah, even more so this time, because they gave him a double.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. Big old full sloppy glass.
I was going to say, that was a generous pour double, too.
Yeah, well, half of it ended up on the floor anyway.
Well, it's his fault for squandering it.
Yeah.
But it was a healthy pour.
And so they make their getaway after the dip falls over from Roger exploding. And they hide out at the movies.
As you do.
As Oswald did.
I didn't even think about that. Jeez.
Wow.
Wow.
That's not, I mean, I'm sure that wasn't intentional.
It might have been.
Well, I don't know, but.
But
I think it's more just like, where would a doofus like Roger be less likely to stick out.
But we find out...
Where do you go in the 40s that's public? They didn't have malls.
I like they're up in the balcony of the movie theater, and Roger's like yipping and yelling, and he's like, "We're trying to hide. Don't you get that?" And he's like,
"Well, it's again, you're attributing more like too much of a human character. Like you have to understand, it is a cartoon, but also we've just got a master class in lack of." Self-control.
Yeah. Oh, no, I get it.
Or, you know, body autonomy.
But Roger's, it's like, it's always, but we also get the newsreel, which we learned that RK Maroon was involved with Cloverleaf financially.
Yeah, he's selling Maroon Studios or whatever.
Right. And
which I find weird if his deal is contingent on the other, like, why, how did it get announced beforehand? That's a bad contingency.
Mm-hmm.
You wait for the contingency to not be still a contingency,
right? Oh, one of the things we didn't mention earlier is when Acme died, the talk of the will,
yeah, because not only is Acme, you know, a weirdo with weird. Items to sell and whatnot. He owns Toontown.
Yep.
Like it's that's and the thought is that or he always told all the cartoons that if anything were to ever happen to him that they would retain ownership and yeah essentially they'd be owners and then proper citizens of Toontown.
But the will's missing. Nobody can find the will. And without the will...
there is no way.
Cloverleaf is going to get ownership of Toontown by midnight, if it doesn't happen. The other thing we missed is when they escaped from the bar, how they escaped was they were going to steal the Weasel's truck, but they didn't have a key.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's like, Roger! From the back, and it turns out it's the cab.
What's it's the taxi Benny. Cab.
Benny the taxi cab is in the back of the truck. And so they escape in Benny, and there's a whole bit of, I'm going to drive. No, I'm going to drive. And the cab's like,
I'm going to drive.
So we get the newsreel. We learn that RK Maroon is shady, basically.
I mean, to be fair, he looks like...
He looks shady,
I mean, he looks like a TV villain.
Yeah. So then we get...
Or just a corporate douchebag. Take your pick.
Corporate douchebag from the 40s, yes.
There you go.
With those brows.
So then we get the confrontation... So then they go to the studio, the Maroon Studios, and Eddie's like, wait in the car, Roger. Wait in the trunk. He's got him in the trunk.
No, he said he just had him in the car.
No, he had him in the car. Right.
No, he said... Wait, he's just like... No, he tells him to watch out for me. So he is actually outside of the car.
Right. That's right. And so then... Eddie goes up to confront Maroon. Comes in through a secret door, by the way.
Why not?
I could think that they might have that for, like, when he was looking to hire Eddie, that's probably the door they let him out of.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look, if you're just on the outside, you don't know that's a door to that.
Fair enough.
But it is kind of odd that he could just.
Yeah, because
just open it.
It wasn't fully established beforehand that this was a thing.
No.
And so it was kind of weird. But he confronts Maroon. Maroon's like, yeah, you know, I paid Jessica to do the thing to do the, you know, to all the things.
Patty cake and the whole
shebang. And then we see this very long gun coming out of the shadows.
Ah, yes.
And we hear, "You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?"
Shut up. But what's cool is the gun matches the gun in the poster.
Yeah.
Which is just a nice little touch.
That's a cool gag.
Yeah. And then we see that somebody knocks Roger out and throws him in the trunk.
Well, we very quickly find out who that is.
Yes, we do. We find out it's Jessica. Like,
he literally looks out the window and you see, after you hear gunshots, you see Jessica running right away.
But even when she hits him with the frying pan, throws him in the trunk.
Yeah.
Camera pans and there she is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
She sort of spins in.
They give us a half a second of mystery for it. Yeah. And then they show us Jessica. And then, RK Maroon gets shot. And then the commencement of the chase of Eddie trying to follow Jessica because Roger's gone. And he sees...
He doesn't know where the hell Roger is.
Right.
He doesn't know that he's in the trunk.
Right, but he sees Jessica running away. He thinks Jessica shot RK Maroon. Mm-hmm. And so he's chasing her in the car until they get to the tunnel to Toontown.
Yeah, and I think also Biff was driving down that tunnel.
Yeah, it's been Robert Zemeckis has used that tunnel a few times. Yeah.
I think there was a hoverboard in there.
I mean, it's a cool tunnel, so I get it.
It's a cool tunnel that actually doesn't look real.
It does feel
it looks like a painting on a brick wall.
But I mean, having seen it in action, yeah. I know it's real. It just doesn't look real.
Yes, it's got a very cinematic feel to it. Yeah.
It actually, I wonder if they did something to it, like a little overlay or something.
Maybe.
It would be the entrance to Toontown. It might make sense to look not
a little
quite,
more like a drawing.
Not quite.
They probably found a way to darken the inside of the tunnel a lot more.
Well, yeah. that helped.
Yeah.
But I just mean like the outside of it did just sort of, it made me think of what happens later on with the woman running into the wall. It's like are you is this literally flat? Like
so Eddie,
is this a portable hole?
Eddie stops because it's Toontown. He hasn't been into Toontown since his brother died.
Oh boy. PTSD.
And he's like, you know what? Fuck it. And he pulls out his cartoon gun.
Don't understand why you would also ditch the real gun, but
well, it was Maroon's gun, so it's evidence against him that he was in the room.
He has a gun of his own.
Yeah, but he doesn't keep it with him because he keeps the Wild Turkey in his holster.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So yeah, he pulls out the gun with the dum dum bullets in the case that he got from Yosemite Sam for getting him out of the hoosegow. And they're like, Eddie Valiant, as I live and breathe.
What do you think Yosemite Sam did to get into the hoosegow?
Honestly?
I mean, he was always getting himself into trouble, shooting and a hooting and a hollering and
that's true.
Whatever else.
Probably something with a horse.
I bet he was a suspect in the Black Dahlia.
Maybe.
Yosemite Sam!
Yeah. No. And then and Eddie, you know, proved his innocence.
I think if any of the Looney Tunes were the Black Dahlia killer, it'd be Foghorn Leghorn.
Who does make a cameo later.
He does.
It was kind of fun just counting the cameos.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
who I recognized and
it's
who
great.
I didn't.
But yeah, so he sees his old friends, the Dum Dum Bullets, and loads them into the gun, and he pulls out his bottle of Wild Turkey to take a swig and goes, I'm done drinking.
I don't need this anymore.
Pours it out, throws it up in the air, and shoots it with his gun.
Shoots it with the racist Indian bullet.
Yeah.
But at least the Indian is killing a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
They really didn't eat turkeys for Thanksgiving, right?
Shut up. It's symbolism.
Probably venison.
I mean, turkeys are indigenous to
North
America, so... I'm sure.
I mean, probably not specifically for Thanksgiving.
No.
But I'm sure they've eaten turkey.
Turkeys are dumb. They're almost as dumb as Roger Rabbit.
That's pretty low praise.
You can't, well, if you dip Roger's head, he will die.
So then, yeah.
Actually, we don't
He gets
know.
Back in the car and decides to drive into Toontown, and we get basically a saccharine version of the tunnel from Chocolate Factory as he enters. With all the happy-go-lucky stuff and smile.
I was going to
say,
the whole world is a great world
after all. Yeah. And, of course, the curtain comes up and immediately crashes into the back of Jessica Rabbit's car, which is crashing into the back of a truck.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what happens when you go into Toontown.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And he's like, well, where'd she go? He's like trying to figure out where she went. He looks up into this tall building and sees the silhouette of a woman that looks like Jessica Rabbit.
Ah, yes.
Oh, and he goes up. This is where we see Droopy in the elevator.
Yeah. And then we see Droopy at the window.
Oh. I guess that's an actual cartoon character.
Is it really?
Yeah. I feel like I've seen her in
something
before.
Probably as exactly that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she goes full Mrs. Roper, and
I feel bad for that character.
I don't, because she's sexually assaulting people. Yeah, like, that's not okay.
She's unhinged.
That's true. How does Eddie go from there to out the window?
I think he falls out the window trying to get away from her. Like, I think he literally falls out the window.
No, he was brought. Wasn't he on the roof?
Yeah.
Because that's where I think. Oh, shit. No, you're right. He must have fallen out the window or trying to just get away from her.
Probably. I can't remember exactly. But then, yeah, he grabs the flagpole. And, of course, Tweety's there.
No, Tweety.
Tweety, the actual...
Little vindictive Tweety.
You know what? Tweety has always gotten too much credit for being a good character.
Tweety's always been pretty evil. Yeah.
You know, they could have gotten Woodstock in there. Couldn't we have gotten some Charles Schultz in here, too, while we were at it?
We only had so much money
good
to pay
grief,
the rights,
David.
Jeez. Yeah.
I mean, we didn't get the Hanna-Barbera characters either.
That would have been ridiculous.
It would have been so insane. But Tweety...
I mean, you could have put some Scooby-Doo and some noir. That would have been fun.
Yogi Bear.
Ugh.
Detective Space Ghost.
Wow.
All of a sudden, there's Herculoids running down the street.
So Tweety comes along.
Rips his fingers off the flagpole. Like
well,
a
here
dick.
We got the 1, 2, 3.
All out of pities.
2, 3.
All out of pities. And yep. He keeps falling.
And falling.
There's Mickey and Bugs skydiving with their parachute packs on. And Eddie's like, "Hey, either of you got a spare?" And Mickey's like, "Oh, Bugs, you got a spare, right?" And Bugs is like, "Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think you want it."
He's like, "I want the spare." Okay, give him the spare.
I expected him to hand him an anvil.
Oh, it's I
really did when he said, "I don't think you want it."
But it's an actual spare.
Yeah, it's a spare tire.
It's so stupid.
Better than an anvil.
Or like back in the old days, it was like silverware and stuff in the backup pack.
Mm, yeah.
But yeah, Eddie goes crashing down with the spare tire. And then I can't remember.
She catches him.
Who catches him?
The broad.
Oh, does she?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot that already. It's been 2 days since I've seen the movie.
Oh, gosh.
I watched it yesterday.
Fair enough. What happens after that?
Then she kisses him and somehow sends him like flying 50 feet away. She runs at him. Eddie grabs the lane marker, throws it against the wall.
Oh, that's right.
And
The lane line into the wall, and she runs smack dab into the wall.
As you would.
Then he ends up in the alley somehow.
Yeah, the alley was right there.
Okay, and that's where we see Jessica.
Yeah, he sees somebody going down the alley.
Mm-hmm. He fires the gun, doesn't he?
He does. And that's when three dummies...
Yeah, because he's like, which way did she go? I think it was this way. And then
goes
the wrong
that
way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
no,
the
he was
way.
Shooting at Doom.
Oh, that's right. He was shooting at Doom. Who now
Doom,
has...
I think Doom
we
must
all
have got,
watched this movie, I swear.
I'm pretty sure Doom... Yeah. I'm pretty sure Doom, like, yelled something to him. No, he had the... It was the same gun again.
It was a long gun.
It was poking out of the dark... Jessica saw it and warned Eddie.
That's right. She was coming up. She shot at him from behind. He was behind him, and turnaround, and then it turns out Jessica
wasn't
the bad guy.
Another classic.
Yeah, it's a pretty classic trope. Yeah. So then Doom gets away with Roger. How did we get back to Acme?
No, he doesn't. He just runs off. He doesn't have Roger because Jessica has Roger.
Right. How did we end up back at the Acme warehouse?
Oh, no. Roger's run off. They're trying to find him. No, that's right. He does take...
Right.
He does take Roger. But...
very complicated plot, guys. Their
cars...
I clearly can't follow it.
Their cars are busted. So Benny comes.
That's right. Yes,
and they come out of the tunnel of Toontown. The barrel of dip is poured on the...
Poor Benny's tires.
Yeah,
poor Benny's
man.
Tires. That had to hurt.
That ain't coming back.
Hey, at least he didn't get the full meltdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was lucky that he was driving so fast.
Right.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the weasels load them all up.
Load them all up. Take them to the Acme warehouse, where we get the grand reveal of all the plans.
All the plans.
That, surprise, surprise, Judge Doom owns Cloverleaf.
I do. Didn't put together until you kept saying Cloverleaf, because I don't think I ever realized what the name of the company was. But the whole idea of an interstate system, yeah, and the Cloverleaf.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's clever.
I love in Doom's speech about, you know, what he wants to build. He's like, a freeway. And they're like, what the hell is that? And he explains it, and like, nobody's going to do that. That's so dumb.
Why would you take a freeway when you can just take the red car for a nickel? I'm going to eliminate the red car. And then you have to.
And there'll be fast food joints and car...
Gas stations
and dealerships and all kinds of things at every exit.
Yeah, it's literally the worst plan ever.
And you build it right on Toontown.
That's exactly what ended up happening in reality.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I mean. Like, that was that layer that you don't get.
I got that a little bit as a kid. Not to the level that I got it now as an adult, but I kind of understood
the allegory.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he's like, yeah, I'm going to take this truck loaded with the most dip you've ever seen in your life and squirt it all over Toontown and destroy it.
I love how proud he is of that vehicle.
Yeah. The street sweeper with a fire hose on top. Mm-hmm.
It looks like the sort of thing like Tom Hanks in Big would have designed, and then been so proud of it just for Mercedes Rule to be like, Josh, this sucks. What is this piece of shit?
I feel like they built it.
Like, I'm sorry, Mercedes. That was terrible.
They're like, okay, we've got a street sweeper. Exactly like her. We've got a fire hose, and we've got this swimming pool. How do we put these all three together to make a vehicle?
Yeah, it literally is some kid just drawing like, okay, build your own car. I want a hot tub. There should be a machine gun here.
So we get this moment where because Doom is twisted. He ties up Roger. Yeah,
he just made the world's most terrible transformer.
He ties up Roger and Jessica and hangs them from a hook in the middle of the room and has them start up the truck and start shooting the fire hose. And he's just like creeping towards them. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I want you to watch this, Eddie. And I'm like, jeez, that's some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
And so Eddie's, you know.
You had to know he was a toon. There's such a flair for the dramatic.
It's very Dick Dastardly.
It's so theatrical, having to put them center stage for this,
right,
too.
And something happens, and I can't remember what, but something happens, and the weasels laugh at something again, and he goes, I told you, if you keep laughing so much, you're going to die of laughter.
Something with Doom's glasses.
Oh, he trips. Somehow the fake eyeballs get knocked out, and he trips.
Oh, yeah, and he does his one big pratfall.
Yeah. And they laugh, and he yells at them and tells them that if they keep laughing, they're going to die of laughter. And then he's like, ding dong, and does this stupid, he hits the music on the carousel thing and starts doing his number.
Look, if it weren't for the lyrics, I would say that this musical number is on par with the Last Unicorn music.
Well, it was very clear that he was improvising a song.
I know, but just...
Yes.
As anybody who's improvised a song knows, that's kind of how it works.
No,
yep,
it's not...
And it can be kind of difficult.
Yeah. No, I said the lyrics are fine.
Yeah.
But I'm saying he has zero musical inclination whatsoever.
Well, I mean like the clunky timing of it and everything is him thinking...
That's not... What I'm just talking about his sheer singing ability.
He can't sing.
You should not say anything negative about Bob Hoskins ever. Okay? That is my Mario.
Nick is like, he's a short, hairy man who can't sing. I can relate to him on a spiritual level.
And he will always be my Mario.
Also, really didn't need the... You don't want to talk about the gratuitous nudity though, but there was nothing more unneeded than a shirtless Bob Hoskins.
What are you talking about?
I thought my feed went to Harry and the Hendersons all of a sudden.
Wow. You're so mean.
I know.
Bob Hoskins was a gem. He was a treasure.
Is he dead?
Yeah. He died in like 2012 or 2014, something like that. Right after he did that movie with Jet Li. Where he was like, he owned Jet Li and had him on a leash.
Unleashed,
yes.
What?
You've never seen that?
No.
Oh, it's... No, it's, I don't want to see that.
That sounds terrible.
It's dark.
It's, you ever see the movie he did with Denzel Washington?
Which one?
Is it Denzel Washington? Because it would have been like... No, maybe... Fuck, I don't remember. He's a heart patient, Bob Hoskins. And he gets somebody else's heart. And now he has the memories of that person.
No, I haven't seen that.
I've seen that movie, that plot line a few times.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not the only time. But.
Yeah, I've actually never seen Unleashed, but Elizabeth was telling me about it. And I guess it's real dark.
It's real dark. Mm. But so, yeah, he's doing the musical number, and I started to say hyenas. The weasels start dropping off. Some of them fall into the dip. Some of them just die laughing. And the whole time, Doom's like, I told you!
And what was the word that he couldn't rhyme? There was a word that he's like, oh, what rhymes with something? Time. And Jessica's like,
time. Ugh. Running out of time.
running out of time. Even Jessica, hanging from a hook, is like, oh, jeez.
That's the dedication
just
to the
rhyme
bit.
Stuff.
So then we get the fight between Doom and Eddie.
Oh, first, I love the bit that the one weasel dies, but somehow still able. The ghost is able to pull the lever.
Yeah,
of course.
So then we get the fight between Eddie and Judge Doom with all the Acme props. The singing Judge Doom pulls the sword out of his cane. Eddie pulls out the singing sword and he's like, which is completely useless.
Yep.
Obviously,
in more ways than one. Drinks like a fish, that sword.
Floppy sword. Gosh, Eddie, you gotta really get a firmer sword.
Well, he drinks too much.
He's got whiskey sword.
Whiskey sword?
I mean, it happens.
But, yeah, then we get the moment where Eddie gets pinned by the magnet. And Doom decides, oh, I'm not going to kill you with my sword now. I'm going to go get the steamroller.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you?
And
captive audience.
Yep. And the steamroller's rolling closer and closer to him. And Eddie's trying to figure out a way to stop it. And he finds the portable hole and gets out of the magnet using the portable hole.
I didn't particularly care for that effect.
Yeah.
It wasn't really, like... Obviously, we know what it does.
That had to be one of the hardest things to do, special effects-wise.
They just didn't have a good angle for that.
Yeah.
That was probably a bit you should have rearranged a little bit.
Fair enough. I mean, as a kid, it never bothered me. But
nah,
I think
it always sort of did, because it's like, yeah, it's a hole, but didn't you just sort of use it as like a knife? Like a frisbee?
Well, I mean, no, because it took a whole channel out of the magnet.
Yeah,
it's not like
it just
it was
doesn't
like
look
a,
good,
a slice. Mm. Fair enough.
For a movie with this much animation that and mixture of live action and animation,
right?
If you're gonna take a shot off,
right.
Let it be that one.
Fair enough. They probably felt like they couldn't, just because they're like, well, then people are gonna like, what happened?
It is. It does go by really fast.
Yeah.
Too.
So he gets out, and then how does Doom end up on the floor? Is it
he gets stuck in the glue?
Oh yeah, but he. Oh, he gets stuck on the glue, and then he gets run over by the steamroller.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we find out also, Doom getting run over by the steamroller, unless you know he's a Toon, that's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I was watching that, and I was like, this got real violent real quick.
Oh, let me ask you, had you figured out that he was a Toon by that point?
I hadn't really thought about it,
okay.
To be honest.
So you thought that was him dying.
Yeah, I was like, are they actually going to steamroll him? They're going to get out of this somehow, because this has been very kid-friendly and pretty clean so far, considering.
Except for the murder of the Toons and the Dip.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So yeah, and then you see him like...
But they were cartoons, not a real person. It's like the orc blood in Lord of the Rings. Like, you never see any human blood. It's only ever orc blood.
That's fair.
Racist.
That is really kind of racist. Wow, Amanda.
It's just a fact.
I wasn't saying she's racist. I'm saying, How would pointing out what happened?
We get the shot of him curling up off of the floor. And it's just so, like, unhinged feeling, that moment. Right? Especially the first time you watch it and you're just like, and I think it is Eddie that says he's a toon.
Yeah.
But it's so weird and surreal feeling when that happens. And then he takes the air hose or the air chuck and blows himself back up.
I always assumed it was helium a little bit just because his voice does change.
But yeah. They talk about the voice earlier on in the movie. Like, when they talk about...
Well, they said he had a high pitch.
Right. When Eddie's talking about the tune that killed his brother.
Yeah.
He's like, the only thing I remember was the big red eyes and the high-pitched voice.
Right.
This voice?
You remember me, Eddie?
What I like is there's only... You gotta sort of process it in real time to get there before it's said.
Right.
Because there's the only real connection you have for a long time, or like the first connection you can make, is when Eddie's talking about the million simoleons.
Yep.
And then that cop mentions that, like, oh, you spread money all over, like a million simoleons or whatever it was. So you have to connect that. And if that's if you're even paying attention, because it's...
What's funny is that's the connection I never made as a kid, was the why this tune that killed Eddie is the one that's also the one that's doing this, right? I didn't put the money connection together as a kid.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying I did either. I'm saying, right. like it's still a pretty nicely written, you know, mystery.
Yeah.
But we're not talking like Sherlock level or anything, but, you know.
Also, the clues are there.
Yeah, Doom, the cartoon, is terrifying. And you had
Chekhov's hole.
like, dagger eyes Doom. Scary as fuck. That scared me as a kid when his eyes turned into daggers.
Oh. I mean, I just thought it was hilarious.
Well, you didn't watch it as a kid.
Not a child, so. Yeah.
Well, the saw is always the...
The saw and... Also, what kind of tune is he? They can just change stuff like that.
I was wondering. I'm like, who? That would have been a great if they could have done a prequel.
Maybe he's Inspector Gadget. I don't know.
But I would love to know like who created Doom and for what purpose.
Yeah. That would be interesting. That would be really interesting.
And what, like, was he always unhinged? Like, what's his origin story?
Yeah. So
I don't need it for any other tune. I just want it for it because that's...
We get this moment where Doom is about to kill Eddie with the saw hand. And Roger and Jessica are about to die from the hose spraying at them.
It's just, it's so close and like it swings and they swing. And right, they're just trying to stay out of it.
And the thing that saves them is the fucking hammer with a boxing glove in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which Eddie shoots... Kind of at Doom. Doom avoids it, but it hits the plug on the back of the tank for the dip, which comes flooding out and goes. And Doom goes full on Wicked Witch of the West. Just, yeah. I'm melting! Also terrifying.
Definitely.
It's almost Raiders level of terrifying. Like the end of Raiders when they open the arc.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's one of my earliest movie memories as a kid. I remember my mom covering my eyes, but
Doom melting is very close to that to me.
Yeah.
Especially when I was a kid, it was like,
I hadn't seen that. I saw this before I saw that.
Same.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I saw the other one. The one that I saw the most was Temple of Doom.
Same. Mm-hmm. Same. I had seen Temple of Doom before this, but I had not seen Raiders before this.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah. It's very, very Wizard of Oz, but also with that feel of the end of Raiders. And it's so just gross.
Which also is funny to watch now, how cheesy that is.
It is, but it's still really gross.
But it scared the crap out of me as a kid.
Oh, hell yeah. So yeah, then Jessica and Roger are like, hey, there's dip everywhere.
Though, like, one intelligent thing... Roger says the entire movie is, how are we going to get down? There's dip everywhere. Like, he understands we can't touch the ground.
And I can't actually eat carrots.
And so...
too much dip.
Eddie sets off all of the what you call it?
Hydrants.
Hydrants, thank you. Fire hydrants to wash off the floor. The truck goes through the wall and into Toontown, and the Toons are all like, what's going on here?
That song's been... That song's been going the entire time, but then eventually they all's like, hey, what the...
See, that's actually the creepiest part for me, is all those fucking cartoons still just like... acid trip happening on the other side of the wall.
Yeah, I hope that Toontown is not entirely that landscape.
Well, I think that's
something cooler. I hope that's just like the horizon in the distance.
Well, I'm sure there are lots of parts of Toontown, right? Like, we got the city part, we got the meadow with the smiley. There's got to be a western part of Toontown. There's, you know, because...
That's true.
Yeah.
They have to have the sets for the cartoons as well.
Probably the fantasy part of Toontown.
This is probably just the welcome to Toontown.
So, yeah. I didn't know this, but I looked it up afterwards. So, when the train hits the truck, every window of the train is showing a different person dying or being murdered.
Oh.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like, in the windows. Yeah.
That's dark.
Like, silhouettes of it happening.
Definitely didn't notice that. No, I just noticed the train.
It's like, boom, right? Yeah. So you don't notice it.
I'd never even heard that before.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Is that not like I'm also pretty sure ghosts in Three Men and a Baby?
It was when I was reading the trivia in IMDb. So I'm pretty sure I did not
see anyone's dick in Teen Wolf.
Apparently.
I've seen it. It is there. I have seen it.
There was a frame.
I think I see what you guys see, and it's maybe not quite what you think it is. Just saying.
Homie's pants were definitely down.
They were.
And something was hanging out.
We need to debunk this somehow. That's another show.
I think Hector and I we were watching Teen Wolf, as you do, and like literally just took the time for the first time in our lives to like really like pause and played it multiple times. It's like, I see it.
I need to see the high def version.
Okay.
Because I think the last time I checked, I need to see
the high def version of Teen Wolf.
No, it's the only version of Teen Wolf.
Oh.
Teen Wolf is a great movie.
I was going to say,
there's no ball cut.
So we're almost at the end of this movie. We've got the scene with all the people there. And, you know, they're still like, well, we don't have the will. And we see that Eddie's stain from Acme's pen is back.
Well, mm-hmm. and we get this is actually the third appearance of the letter.
Yeah.
Where somebody tries to read the letter.
It's the letter that Roger wrote in lipstick to Jessica. And
they had mentioned invisible ink
right
early on.
Well, it's disappearing ink. That's when he squirted him. He's like, it's disappearing ink. And then...
But it reappeared because it's disappearing and reappearing ink.
Disappearing, reappearing ink. And Eddie's like, Roger, read your letter. This is the perfect time to read your letter to Jessica. And he's like... How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I, Marvin Acme, of being a sound mind.
By the way, I'm reading it along with him. He's got like depth perception issues or something.
Sure.
Because he was like third line. You see how large he's, right? He's on the third line of that, and he's got to go.
And he can see at the top.
Yeah, he's got to go like two inches up just to get back.
We're going to let it go because he's a cartoon.
And he obviously has a learning disability.
Well, yes.
So we find out the Toons get Toontown in perpetuity forever and ever and ever.
Ever and ever and ever.
Because that's how these things work.
And then what does Roger do that was stupid? Because he was like, now you love Toons again, right, Eddie? And then he does something stupid and like Eddie gives him a look and then he kisses Roger.
And he joy buzzes him.
That's right. He joy buzzes him. And then Eddie kisses Roger.
Aww.
And then Porky and Tinkerbell come in and wrap things up in a nice little bow. And that's Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Who?
Well, Judge Doom and Arkham Maroon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who?
I guess in the book.
Yeah, that was another thing in looking at the wiki. No idea this was a book.
Apparently the book ends with, I think,
I had no idea. I
think Roger's the bad guy at the end of the book or something like that.
Oh.
And Roger dies in the book.
Well, they made this a kid's movie.
It's not Who Framed.
Back then, yeah. they did not shy away from... Characters dying in kids' movies.
I think in the book, Jessica turns out to be a bad person.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Roger dies.
Which is wild.
You missed two of my favorite jokes in the movie, both pertaining to Jessica. The one, I can't remember when they when they've captured her and Roger, the weasel reaches all the way down her dress, and I'm like, well, that got weird. Like, because again, this has been a very clean movie up to this point, but wrap all the way down her dress, and then you hear a snap, and he pulls his arm back, and his arm's in a bear trap, and Roger's like, oh, nice booby trap.
Oh, no, it was Eddie.
Eddie says nice booby trap.
Nice booby trap, which that
it's
made
even
me,
creepier than
that.
It's like totally not, chuckle. Not her husband, and well.
But she's got a booby trap. Yeah, and.
Creepy old man.
Eddie also asks her at some point, what do you see in him? And she just goes, he makes me laugh.
Well, you know what?
And I'm like, you know what? Relatable content.
And we learned from Betty Boop that Roger is a catch for some reason.
Well, that's what, Betty Boop says it. And that just.
Roger is straight up golden retriever energy. He's an idiot. He's always going to be there for you. He's going to make you
laugh.
He's
loyal.
You're going to feel safe with him.
Well, I think that's what it's, I think that's a greater thing about, like, the tunes in general is that they judge people on the content of their character.
Also, when it comes to patty cake, he's a giver.
Not the color of their skin?
No, just, well, it's...
It was speech.
Yes, I know.
Okay, I didn't know. You just looked at me and you've been smoking weed, so I thought perhaps it went over your head.
No, it did not.
Well, that was almost 2 hours ago, so.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so final thoughts, Amanda.
So I like this movie more than I thought I would. It was, again, it leaning towards the like kids movie aspect of it, I think made me like it more. I was like, oh, this is a fun kids movie. I totally understand why little boys would really enjoy this movie. I enjoyed all the cameos. I didn't get nearly as excited about it as Bob, but like I did enjoy the variety of cameos that Dumbo at the window. I was like, oh, Dumbo. And
works for peanuts.
Yeah, and where he works for peanuts. And
and even that comes off as, like, either way, and Maroon says that, is so slave owner.
Very exploitative.
Yeah.
So,
and then he, you know, makes a comment about we got half the cast of Fantasia. And, like, as they're walking around the lot, like, you literally are seeing, like, the hippo walks by and the ostrich and the brooms and like,
see,
half the cast of Fantasia is
there. We also see Yosemite Sam come flying in, which is great.
And putting his ass out on the pavement.
Yeah, which is totally classic Yosemite Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't they have had a bucket there or something for the guy? Like, I don't see how that helped it too much.
I don't know.
Like, he just stamped it out against pavement.
So, yeah, overall, it was a cute movie. I did enjoy it. It's not something that I'm ever going to probably be like, oh my God, let's watch Roger Rabbit. I'm never going to have the joy and the nostalgia for it that you guys do, but it was a cute movie.
Okay.
Yeah. I was staggered to realize how long it must have been that I last watched this movie because, yeah, I mean, it was something I really loved, still do love on a different level now, and that's more than you can ask for, picking up something new and something you've seen so many times. It's a rewarding experience to not feel like it's, even though it's, I mean, it's a period piece, so of course it's sort of dated. But that, for all the ground they broke with this movie, it still seems really impressive.
Well, and the only joke in the movie that feels dated because of, you know, just the world moving forward is the Native American bullet.
Yeah.
That's really the only thing that feels like.
Yeah, most of the rest of it is pretty okay.
Yeah.
I guess it was nice that they at least included the Indian bullet in with the cowboys. Like, they can get along in that.
They were part of the same.
Yeah, yeah. There's also the obviously Mexican one in there as well. If you looked at the bullets in the box.
Yeah. He didn't speak.
No, he didn't get a part.
They did. But, yeah, they
Yeah, because there were a lot of cartoons especially a lot of the Looney Tunes cartoons that have been quote unquote canceled now. And like some of them, I'm like, that's kind of dumb. And some of them, I'm like, yeah, that's probably for the best.
The main ones are Speedy.
Looking at you, Pepe Le Pew.
Pepe Le Pew is a rapist. I mean, that's, I think it's obvious at this point. But, you know, people talked about Speedy Gonzalez and the Mexican culture.
The Mexican community is like, we love Speedy.
Right. But there was that question of, is this offensive?
I think Foghorn Leghorn should be the one who gets canceled, frankly.
I mean, I'm sure. I mean. I say. I only said a couple of things that were hurtful. So sorry, we kind of interrupted your wrap up.
I don't think
on
so.
It.
I think I'm good until. Are we grading too? Then
hold on, I haven't given mine, and we haven't given our weirdo yet.
There's so many weirdos in this.
So
it's
for
hard.
Me, I went in knowing I loved this movie as a kid, but also worried that I wouldn't. Like it as much as an adult, right?
That.
I had that fear going into this one. I'm like, is this going to hold up for me? And it did. And I found that the things that I loved as a kid were fun still for me, but also finding things that I didn't realize as a kid, like Dave talked about, and thinking about the layers that they added in and all the nuance, and even appreciating that balance of having to take something completely absurd and shoehorn it in with a style of fiction that is
a cohesive world,
right? That you would not expect to put in. It's like fusion food. That's like a weird combination, but they made it work and it works so well. And I love that for. I love this movie for that. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's the nostalgia factor for sure, and you know, getting to see shaving a haircut again, and Scotch on the Rocks, and all the dumb jokes that I loved as a kid. But also, yeah, the filmmaking aspect of it was much more eye-opening for me this time, which was a lot of fun. All right, favorite weirdos. I know it's got to be hard because this movie's full of weirdos.
Absolutely loaded with weirdos.
It's all weirdos.
It's, yeah, pretty much.
I'll give you mine since you guys are thinking.
Okay.
Yeah, this is going to take a bit.
My favorite weirdo, and it was hard. I went back and forth. Like, I really wanted to choose one of the weasels, but I couldn't differentiate them enough to go this specific weasel. And so I ended up going with Baby Herman is my favorite weirdo.
That's fair.
Because he's living the life. He is living that life.
I think that makes him oddly not weird.
He's fair. A baby.
I feel like.
He's a 50-year-old baby that smokes cigars. I'm sorry. He's a weirdo.
He's just living like Snoop. What do you want?
he is living like Snoop.
baby Snoop.
I mean, going back to the whole sex worker thing, I'm sure there's plenty of sex workers that have had Baby Herman as a client, too, where he's like, I want to wear diapers and smoke cigars and have you treat me like a baby.
There you go. That's
that's a thing,
somebody
for sure.
And actually being requested to be called Baby Herman.
Yeah.
That is probably definitely happening.
Oh, God. If you're listening to this and you've had a client request to be called Baby Herman, please write into us and let us know. And,
I genuinely
or
would love to hear
cake.
About it.
Or play patty cake,
yes. Or anything like that.
We should have a board keeping track of
weird, people's weird sex things from movies.
No, just those two. I want a running tally.
Just Baby Hermans versus patty cakes?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or both?
Well, just a point in each.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just... Oh gosh, I had a really bad thought. I'm not even gonna share it.
Okay.
Well, no. Look, I haven't come up with my weirdo yet. Go ahead.
Just as like, I always think of like weird words that people should say, like could say at crescendo, if you will, like, at point of completion.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking of Baby Herman just going, my stogie.
Yeah, you should have kept that to yourself.
I told you I was going to.
I thought he was gonna say. I thought he was just saying, like, just yell out Baby Herman.
No.
So that's better, really. I mean,
oh, you guys are really stuck on
I think
these weirdos.
I think, you know what? I'm going to go the other way because to be a weirdo in this movie means you have to be normal.
So you're going with Dolores?
So I'm saying Dolores.
Dolores is great in this movie.
She's great.
I love that, like, the three main women characters in this are the
voices of reason.
They're very dignified.
Yeah.
Me, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like in a, especially in a time when, we've seen enough of Mad Men.
Yeah.
To know kind of what that was like. Like it's just nice. That, yeah. They're obviously the ones with their heads on the straightest and, and yeah, they're they're supportive, but also know to when to take command. And So yeah, Dolores.
Okay. Amanda.
I'm gonna go with the taxi cab.
Benny's great.
Benny is great.
Gets him out of some sticky spots.
And he still does his job as cabbie,
he's keeping
people entertained.
He also is generally kind of a voice of reason.
He
needs new tires now.
You know, he really is he's the perfect taxi.
He really is.
Because he knows very innovative ways in getting where you need to go. You always got a willing conversationalist there, and
I would trust Benny to get me where
yeah,
I need
to
go
in
New
York
or LA.
No questions asked either. Yep. He's my. I mean,
the only
Benny may need a different paint job if we're going to rob this bank.
The only criticism I have is that we didn't really get any scenes with the taxi and Christopher Lloyd.
Nope.
No, but
this
that
was
is definitely
kids movie.
No, but because he's a taxi,
no
is, which
toxic
is why
masculinity
up,
allowed.
Which is why he ended up in the back of that paddy wagon. I hate those things.
Why does he keep calling the taxi Tony Danza?
And you really could have, and if you had, if Andy Kaufman would have been alive to do this, he might have been alive, but not well.
Yeah, he was definitely not well if he was alive.
But you could have had him in as the crossover because he's part cartoon, part.
He would have done Mighty Mouse.
Oh,
nice.
Classic! All right, I think it's time to score this.
I think it's time to score it.
All right, first time watcher, you get to go first.
I'm gonna go as a first time watcher. Pretty much just saying that while I do not have the love for this movie that you guys do, it was a solid film. I did enjoy it. I'm gonna go with 7, because that's like that's my grade for like this was solid. I don't feel like I need to watch it again, but I'm not mad about it. 7 out of 10 jujubes, because they are old school and they get stuck in your teeth, but you still like them even though they're kind of annoying.
Fair enough.
My heart wants to give it a 10. For its effect on the industry and the fact that for all the awards that he's won, Robert Zemeckis made his greatest film with this.
That's a bold statement. I'm not saying I disagree with
you.
It's a bold statement.
It's not flawless, but I don't think there's ever going to be a point in my life where I won't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to split the difference heart and head. I'm going to go 9.5.
9.5 weeks.
And, damn, I had my candy yesterday and I forgot what it was.
Oh, no.
Try to think of the reason you chose that candy. It might help.
I am.
Oh.
I'm going to go with 9.5 Reese's peanut butter eggs that were probably laid by Roger Rabbit.
Because he's the Easter Bunny? Okay.
Okay.
Or bugs, fine. I don't care.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Robert Zemeckis, and I...
Yeah, he is just the director.
Right,
of the
but
movie,
you don't but... really think about him when you think about this movie, but he is.
Yeah, it is sort of weird thinking, like, when you really start tallying up his accolades, you're like,
but he's also made some stinkers too, and that's I think the reason why he
and he's
get...
made a little of both with Tom Hanks.
Fair enough.
So, nobody's perfect.
Yes, I still love this movie. I think there are moments that aren't perfectly thought out, but there's so much going on in this movie that I really do enjoy, and I think that is really well done. It was one of the things that I read about this is when they pitched this to the studio, the idea of doing animation along with live action, a lot of people wanted to minimize the risk of it and like make it, you know, static backgrounds, stuff like that. And Zemeckis and the team were like, no, we're going to make this as dynamic feeling as possible. That way it's going to feel more real in the world, which made it harder to animate this movie and harder to make this movie than had they not done it that way, had they decided to play it safe. And they had to hand paint all the cells for the animation part. So they filmed the movie and then took the individual cells and painted them into the animation.
Yeah, that's your...
That's so wild.
Well, that's what happens if you don't green screen.
Right, well, also it's pre...
But you can't because...
Pre-CGI. Yeah, because
it didn't exist.
Right. So
I'm pretty sure Lucas was still using it.
So for all of this...
Yeah, in 88, I guess he probably was.
Yeah, right on the edge of it. And the fact that, I mean, it's just a fun movie. I give it an 8.8.
Wow.
I
would have thought you would have gone higher.
An 8.8 for a movie from 88.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
At 88 miles an hour. Robert Zemeckis, thank you. Sorry. 8.8. Scotch on the Pop Rocks.
dumb.
That sounds terrible. Well, I was thinking of the candy. I'm like, pull out rocks because I loved Scotch on the Rocks, the joke Scotch on the Rocks as a kid. So
clearly.
Pop Rocks. 8.8 Pop Rocks. So there you go. That was Who Framed Roger Rabbit? I think we all generally enjoyed the movie. It ranged from a 7 to a 9.5. So I'm guessing it's going to fall somewhere in the 8s in our average, which is pretty high up there on our list of movie ratings so far. If you are listening to this and want to share your thoughts, think we're completely wrong, or just want to, you know, just share your thoughts about anything when it comes to this movie, please feel free to do so. But we're going to move on to our 10th film that we're going to watch in this show. 10! We've already made it to 10.
Wow. We watch too many movies and talk about them for way too long.
I know.
And I was just watching other movies this week that we're not going to be able to do because you guys have already seen them. So.
Mm. Oh, really?
And some that I may end up doing in the future that you haven't.
Fair enough.
Okay.
So we're on but to...
It's not my choice, though.
It is not your choice. It is Amanda's choice this time around.
It is my choice, and I'm gonna continue the trend of... We have this list of like 250-some movies, and we keep just adding a couple right before we podcast, and then just being like, have you seen it?
Well, there's a bunch that we just need to take off of there that none of us are ever going to watch.
Yeah, that's true.
I think sometimes we should choose a movie that none of us have watched, honestly.
Maybe we'll get to that.
How about, you know, what if I just feel like just we maybe for some, it would have been nice for this month, but if we would have done all like movies none of us have ever seen, and we're just going to we're going to totally do it blind, and we just pick something based on a description or a trailer or something.
We'll figure something out. Yeah. But we're not there yet.
Hey, you know what? Let's shoot for October.
That's a good chunk of time away.
Maybe. It is a good chunk of time away.
The hunt for new October.
Oh, boy.
Wow. All right, get to the unveiling.
You interrupted her.
You did.
You interrupted me so much.
I did.
oh, God.
Look, I'm self-aware. And I'm also going to stick with my theme of, like, picking childhood classics. Well, I guess Pan's Labyrinth wasn't childhood, but it was high fantasy.
It felt like it.
And go with one of my favorites, dark movies as a kid, Legend.
See, I knew you were going to pick this one as soon as I saw it show up on the list.
Oh, yeah. Well, we talked about it last podcast, too, and when I was like, you guys haven't seen it? Yeah. This was my young goth girl awakening, seeing Tim Curry as Darkness.
Oh, thank you for reminding me. Okay, good. Now I have something to hold on to.
It also has Mia Sara in it.
Oh.
But not Mia Farrow.
No, just Mia Sara.
Good God. Not again.
So yeah, the dark high fantasy Legend starring the ineffable Tim Curry.
Yeah, we had a conversation literally before we started recording this.
Why did I think about Tom how Cruise great was Tim Curry
is? He is in it. I didn't want to ruin it for you.
Well,
but
that kind of ruins it.
This is probably the first thing I ever saw Tom Cruise in.
I will say I do not.
He's like 19 in this movie or something.
Look, Tim Curry, in theory, should more than
cancel out the Tom Cruise issue.
Yeah.
There are many, many. This is going to be another fun one for you guys to pick your favorite weirdo, because there are a whole lot of weirdos in here.
I mean, it's going to probably be Tim Curry. Let's be real.
He's not a weirdo movie. He
plays a devil. Uh-huh. A red devil.
A real hot, enticing devil. And I never understood why Mia Sara not want to wear that dress and sit down and have dinner and conversation with
him. Don't spoil it for us. When you said red devil, I was thinking of like John Lovitz.
No.
That is very different.
I'm like, I hope he doesn't play that.
So yeah, tune in next time. Well, we are going to discuss Legend, and I am excited. I knew you guys probably wouldn't like The Last Unicorn, but I think you guys will both enjoy this movie. So if you don't, I'm going to be real heartbroken.
We're going to find out. You were so heartbroken about The Last Unicorn.
Once I find
where I can watch Legend.
The Legend of Zelda.
That is when we got to figure out where we can watch it, because I did not check on that. I
actually spent the $5 on Fandango for Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh.
Totally but that's it. To own. So.
Oh, that's nice. Fair.
Yeah. So
that's totally worth it then. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. If you feel so inclined, please give us a rate and review on iTunes. We'd appreciate that. Tell your fans, friends, tell your family, tell people on the street about the show. If
just scream it at them.
Yeah, if you have a fit of road rage, just yell films like so the first time at them.
Where can they send their good feedback?
They can give good feedback to memoriamdevelopment@gmail.com or onto our Facebook page.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can also send any hate mail to me on X at Daddy Bobert.
Oh, wow.
Daddy Bobert.
Okay.
You're such a dad. Oh, 1985. We're stuck in the 80s, by the way. Legend was in 1985.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see it in 85 because I was only five. It was probably like 92 or something by the time I saw it, but yeah.
All right. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. This was our discussion on Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Stay tuned. Next time will be Legend. Thank Woo-hoo. You very much.
I Bye. Am Legend.
Development.